think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football, like Ferguson said. Football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 276 of Low Limit Football on this 14th of March, 2020. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we will be discussing all things football as the world shuts down, football leagues shut down in fear of the coronavirus pandemic. European leagues are also shut down as well. American leagues are shut down. However, we have plenty to talk about. Let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. Hopefully you're happy, healthy, and safe.
Absolutely, Joe, and I hope for the same as well. I think in the end, while football does seem to be a crucial part of our lives, I think the most important thing in our lives is to have good health and to be happy, and for everyone in your close circle to be as well.
Amen. Amen. And we wish that to all the listeners as well. Obviously, the global pandemic that we're dealing with right now with COVID-19, the coronavirus, and, you know, like I said, you know, leagues, not only football league, soccer league shut down, but also NBA shut down, NHL shut down. You know, we've seen the Masters canceled already. We've seen many, many different things happen so far that have really affected world sport and really in an effort to squash the progression of this disease and really kind of end it so that we can get back to normal, some semblance of normalcy in our lives here. So we're going to talk about that certainly in a couple of minutes. But Rob, let's jump into my trivia question really quick, because it is my honor. And, you know, we need a little humor in our lives right now. So I know we're going to talk about this a little later on in the show, but tonight's trivia question is Ronaldinho, okay? And you gave me a great trivia question last week about players that have won both the Copa Libertadores and the Champions League. Ronaldinho was one of them. Obviously, we talked about him going to jail right now in Paraguay and everything else that is going on with that. So I look back because today I believe the story is that Ronaldinho's prison soccer team won the competition in the Paraguayan prison league that he's in. And because of it, they win, I believe, a 16-kilo pig that I believe is roasted and for the team as a meal. So it's just another trophy that Ronaldinho has won in his illustrious footballing career. But my real question to you, including the youth titles that Ronaldinho has won, which are the FIFA Under-17 World Championship, the Olympic bronze medal, and the CONMEBOL pre-Olympic tournament in 2000, how many trophies has Ronaldinho won, club trophies, club or international trophies? So I'm asking you for a number. I'm giving you three of those. So if you could include those three in your number to give me a grand total.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And we'll give you the answer at the end of the show. So let's talk real football now. Let's talk about real football that is not involving the coronavirus. And of course, we do have that kind of news. And the news comes from the United States with the president of U.S. Soccer, Carlos Cordero, stepping down from his position on Thursday from what has stemmed from comments that were released from court documents in the lawsuit for equal pay for the women's portion of U.S. Soccer. In these court documents, there was much that was, I would say, sexist at this point, Rob. And in the documents, it was argued by U.S. Soccer that male players have a, quote, more responsibility, and the men's team, quote, requires a higher level of skill than female counterparts. The females or the women's national team then in protest went out to their Wednesday match in the She Believes Cup with the U.S. soccer jerseys turned inside out so you could see the four stars from the titles, but you could not see the U.S. soccer emblem. And after that, Megan Rapinoe really ripped into the Federation. This has all led to Carlos Cordero stepping down and currently Cindy Parlow Cohn, a former U.S. women's national team player herself, taking over in Cordero's place. This is something that, you know, unfortunately shakes the foundation of U.S. soccer, but I think for me, Rob, shakes it in a good way. When we had those elections to replace Sunil Gulati a few years ago, we, many people, including myself, felt that Cordero was Gulati 2.0 and that things weren't going to truly progress the way they needed to. Now we have a change. We have sort of that vacuum again in U.S. soccer, and we're going to have new elections. Cindy Parlow is going to be an interim president for now, but the new elections are going to come up. Do you feel, Rob, that we're going to finally see real change or change that is needed to not only progress the U.S. men's and women's programs equally, but at the same time, maybe progress the views and the vision of U.S. soccer, because many people that follow and love U.S. soccer are not exactly enamored with the way things have gone since the whole shakeup, since the Trinidad and Tobago loss and the elimination from the World Cup?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing from, I think the women's side are being very audacious and very brave to say what they've said, you know, to go out there and do the advocacy that they've done and have always done for many, many years. I think now what we're seeing is that, you know, there is a reason why they have to be respected and why they, you know, are the best in what they are, because they've earned their way. I mean, I don't want to get into a whole, you know, battle the sexes or anything, but I feel as if though what we're seeing here is generally the feeling that people are done. Like they're really looking at this as a sign of that change has to happen. That comments that have been made from those at the top are unacceptable. I think in 2020 they can't be said in a time like this. I feel as if though there is really that kind of appeal and ideas of going into what this whole notion of equal pay and being treated as proper people and proper players because of what they've shown and what they've done. I mean, yes, there had been a lot of controversy being made at U.S. soccer, and there's always been, I think, but now what we're seeing with the likes of what U.S. women's soccer, the team is doing, it shows as if though there really has that kind of, you know, spine about them, and that they really matter. And there are a lot of people out there that really have a say and want to speak out. So it's a good thing. We can only hope that the resignation of Cordero and hopefully the other people that are involved in U.S. soccer are able to provide their own thoughts to hopefully make this better, because, you know, it only has to be resolved from there when you have your best women's team in the world, and, you know, obviously a men's team that is growing because of the talent that is happening over there. So there has to be that kind of equal reasoning and balance, but, you know, you have to put in the right work for both the teams.
Yeah, you know, and I'm reading from the CNN article that Cordero, when asked about this, called the wording unacceptable and inexcusable and regretted not fully reviewing the filing before it was submitted. To me, Rob, you know, it's not only on Carlos Cordero at that point when we're talking about this aspect of this simple thing about the court filing itself and how it was handled and who read it and what was done with it and why it was entered before it was read, proofread, discussed. Okay. It seems irresponsible not only of Cordero, but also of the board of directors. But wouldn't it seem super irresponsible on the legal team that is handling this to go, hey, we wrote this, but man, this doesn't kind of jive. I mean, doesn't some of the culpability have to lie with the people that U.S. soccer pay to handle these things?
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. And not to say that Cordero stepping down was the right or wrong move. I'm not talking about that in this. But I feel like U.S. soccer or the board of directors maybe needs an overhaul as well. Because of something like this that is so massive and really so sexist when you look at the comments themselves, it's irresponsible to put it in as a legal document that will then get released and seen by all. It kind of screams, you know, it's archaic, okay, in terms of the way it was worded. And I think the next time around for anybody, that you probably should read things twice before you put it out there. So moving forward, you know, obviously, like I said, Cindy Parlow Cohn is now going to be the interim president until the elections come up, which I believe are next year. Rob, correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Yep.
And with that in mind, does U.S. soccer take the opportunity to do a pivot here, or do you feel that there are too many of the old guard still in charge to really do that proper pivot?
I think there still is that kind of old guard, but I think at the same time, you know, when we see people speaking out from both sides of the coin, from U.S. soccer, from the men's players, the women's players, you know, esteemed journalists, and obviously those who have a kind of pull in U.S. soccer, we might see that kind of change come, but it's not going to happen overnight. I think it's going to happen organically and hopefully that it could be shifted into hopefully a more understood and reasonable arguments as to why they have to be treated equally.
Agreed. So let's table the discussion of U.S. soccer here for now, and let's bring in Jonathan Johnson for all things French football from ESPN, who was able to join us earlier and discuss not only PSG, but coronavirus and how things are being affected in Europe. So without further ado, Rob, the Jonathan Johnson interview. And joining us from ESPN for all things French football, Jonathan Johnson. Jonathan, welcome back to the show. How are you today?
Hey there, guys. Thanks a lot for having me back on. Very well. Thank you, and you both.
Oh, we're doing fantastic. Thanks for coming back. I want to open up the questioning quickly and try and stick to a little bit of football to start with PSG. Obviously, the 2-0 victory over Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League midweek, advancing them to the final eight of the Champions League competition, should it still continue. Neymar opening the scoring in the 28th minute and really by all accounts having one of his better matches, especially given that he really needed to perform here at this point. What were your thoughts on Neymar's performance, PSG's performance, and moving further into the competition?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a very good performance on the whole from the whole squad. I thought Neymar was very good. It was a very disciplined, very measured performance, and obviously he stuck out. Scored the first goal, played a role in the second, and that's essentially why PSG bought him and spent so much money on him. It's just taken them a long time, you know, to finally get him fit and in a position where he can actually contribute in the latter stage of the Champions League. It's just unfortunate for him, unfortunate for PSG, but unfortunate for everybody, involved in European football that such a crisis has descended on us. And there are much more important things than football. Health obviously being one of the majorly most important things, and it's just unfortunate for everyone that it's had to grind everything to a halt. And obviously PSG will feel a bit frustrated by that. Neymar as well, especially when you look at how much it meant to him, how much emotion he'd invested in that match.
You know, Jonathan, just looking into that whole match as a whole, I mean, obviously it was a big win for them, big win for PSG to be able to advance to the quarterfinals, and I think in quite some time. But there was a bit of controversy, at least from those that are pundits or those that are on social media, that had viewed this kind of celebration made by the PSG players with the fans and whatnot a bit unnecessary because of just winning a round of 16 game and being in the position that PSG is in with the financial backing. It just seemed a bit much, especially as well with the celebration made towards, the ridicule of Erling Haaland as well. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I thought the Haaland stuff was a bit tasteless. I mean, I think the whole squad doing it was a bit unnecessary. I could understand Neymar, you know, sort of doing it after the goal, even though at that stage of the match, you know, there's still a risk that it will come back and backfire on PSG. I just think that, you know, that sort of stuff from one player to another is fair game. So I didn't have too many complaints over Neymar doing the celebration, maybe just about the timing of it, because the match was only, you know, on its way towards the midpoint at that stage. And then what Neymar said on Instagram afterwards in response to, you know, this post from Haaland on Snapchat. But afterwards, you know, I think with the celebrations with the fans, it got a little bit out of hand, but I think that also gives you an idea of just how much pressure, how much negativity PSG have been subject to over the last couple of years with these, you know, humiliating exits at the hands of the likes of Barcelona and Manchester United. Okay, it wasn't so humiliating against Real Madrid, but, you know, there's been a lot of frustration building up over the last couple of years. PSG haven't gone as far as they would like to, you know, and often haven't done themselves justice when they've been in a good position to do so. So, you know, I think that they, you know, had been waiting for a moment like this when they could really sort of unleash the rage that they felt about all of the negativity that surrounds them. And it's almost like their people hope that they sort of fail and have, you know, one of those sort of annual implosions, and, you know, to have avoided it and to have actually made it to the quarterfinals for the first time since 2016, you know, you could sense the relief within the PSG squad. I just think that they took it a little bit too far with all of the Haaland stuff, you know, and I think, you know, there needs to be some common sense. You know, Kazawa running out into the street to celebrate with the fans was a bit dumb. You know, I think it was, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it was the local authorities who said that the PSG fans could gather outside of Parc des Princes. So it's that, I think it's they who have to, you know, sort of answer a lot of the questions about that. Sure, I doubt they imagined that as many PSG fans would gather as that, but, you know, that's what happened, and it's now up to them to, assuming games go ahead behind closed doors again between now and the end of the season, if the season even gets back underway, to finish. You know, it's going to be up to them to put measures in place to avoid that kind of thing. It didn't surprise me to see the PSG fans come out in force once they were given that opportunity. And even though I think it was very wishful thinking of PSG to try and install a big screen outside of the stadium, you know, it didn't surprise me at all that that idea was shut down.
Yeah, definitely. Talking about, let's shift away from Liga for a bit and talk about your team, Aston Villa. Well, some really great news that happened over the weekend in response to all the postponements of the and cancellations of all of the World Football Leagues because of coronavirus. But the big news here was that Aston Villa donated 850 staff packed lunches and hot food dishes from their postponed game to various local homeless charities. I mean, that's a great initiative, and hopefully that many teams, not just in the Premier League, but I think all across Europe and even the world can learn from that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's always very nice to see, you know, your club making such a gesture. You know, Villa have always been very close to a lot of the, you know, a lot of the charities and things, various things set up within the local community. So it didn't surprise me to see them making that sort of gesture. I would like to point out as well, it wasn't just Villa. I know that the PSG, with all the meals that were prepared for the Dortmund game, which I think were around 6,000 You know, they were also donated to to the fight against homelessness in Paris. So, you know, Villa weren't alone in doing that, but it's great to see a lot of clubs of different size and stature making these gestures at a time like this.
Now, Jonathan, just jumping back in here, because obviously the coronavirus and the epidemic or the pandemic that we're dealing with worldwide is front and center on everyone's mind. What are you hearing from the various leagues in terms of this pause? How will it affect the leagues? And what, in your opinion, do you see is the proper solution or resolution moving forward since everyone is shut down for the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult to say right now what the solution should be or could be. We'll just have to wait and see how this evolves. There is a lot of discussion at the moment. You've got the likes of the Lyon president, Jean-Michel Aulas, basically saying that this season should be voided, which is similar to Karen Brady of West Ham. I find that very rich. It's quite convenient that it's coming from two people associated with clubs who are not doing as well as they perhaps should do in their respective leagues this season. There's also been the LFP CEO coming out and saying the season is suspended. It's not being cancelled, so it will pick up again at some point. So it definitely seems like here, at least in France, the idea, the hope is that the season is going to be able to go all the way and finish. I think the big question really at the moment that everybody in European football in particular is waiting for is for UEFA to decide what's going to happen about the European Championships this summer, because without the pressure of being finished in time for that, I think it's going to make it easier for a lot of other leagues to finish.
Now, I was on TalkSport myself the other night, and I had suggested that really the Euros are going to be the key here, that maybe the Euros should be shifted to later in the summer or maybe even moved on to the next year so that it allows for these leagues to finish, including Champions League, Europa League, and all the other competitions. In your opinion, do you feel that it's going to get moved, the Euro 2020 will get moved to 2021? Do you feel that they'll shift it, or do you think they'll cancel the Euros altogether?
No, I think they will shift it. I don't think they'll cancel it, but I think the most responsible thing to do at this moment in time is to move it at least until 2021. We'll see what happens. But because of the nature of the tournament, it's not just confined to one country. It's going to be, people going back and forth between various countries. I think there's no other option apart from to postpone this for the moment.
I concur completely to allow for the completion of these leagues and these competitions that we have now, and even start to handle the World Cup qualifiers as we start to get into those.
To be honest, I don't even think it's really that related to the league situation. I just think it's common sense. It doesn't seem like this sort of problem is going to, be completely cleared up by the time the proposed start date of the tournament rolls around. So I think it would be irresponsible to even try to push ahead with it at this moment in time. And the earlier the decision's made, the better. And it allows for people to sort of, react to that change in logistics. And for that reason alone, I think that it's better to call it now that it's going to be pushed back until the summer of 2021.
Do you feel they'll make that decision on Tuesday when they have the conference?
I mean, to be honest, it surprises me that it's not being made sooner. But yes, you would expect that that's the logical outcome of the meeting on Tuesday. I know that the LFP in France will meet after UEFA reveal their decisions after that meeting has taken place, and you'd assume that then it gives them sort of an idea of the time frame that they're playing with in terms of completing this season.
Perfect. Jonathan, thank you again for joining us. Definitely be well and be safe during these difficult times. And we look forward to having you back again very, very soon.
Thanks a lot, guys. A pleasure as always. And speak to you soon. Take care.
And thanks again to Jonathan Johnson for joining us on the show. Rob, let's jump back into it. Obviously, what's front and center here in the world is the coronavirus pandemic that we've got going on. Let's talk a little bit of football real quick, and let's give you the Champions League results, because obviously some pretty important results. As we discussed with Jonathan, Paris PSG going on to a 2-0 victory over Borussia Dortmund and advancing to the final eight of the Champions League. Atalanta in a thriller, Rob, a 4-3 victory on the road at Valencia with an aggregate score of 8-4. Just magnificent performance from them so far. Atleti with what was, Rob, could only be considered a thriller. Maybe we'll talk about it for a second, but Atleti with a 3-2 victory at Anfield, breaking Liverpool's home winning streak and eliminating them from the Champions League. And the last one, RB Leipzig with a 3-0 victory at home over Tottenham Hotspur, 4-0 on aggregate, and that team is advancing as well. Rob, let's talk about the Atleti-Liverpool match just briefly, because this was one of those defensive masterclasses that you expect out of Cholo Simeone, one of those gritty performances. But when Liverpool do come and tie up the match again, 1-1 on aggregate, we go into added extra time and then get that goal to go to 2-1. You really started to think that, you know, here we go, Liverpool again, doing Liverpool things as you would expect. But Atleti, with some brilliant countering, some great play from Alvaro Morata, and the Marcos Llorente brace in extra time, really doing Liverpool in. When you went into extra time, Rob, before the Firmino goal scored, did you expect Liverpool to kind of pull this one out, or did you think this was going to penalties? What were your thoughts?
I think, given the fact of how Liverpool were just knocking on their door, I was really convinced that there was going to be penalties. But at the same time, I think what makes this tie and what made Atleti so special is the fact that, you know, that they never gave up, that they were always going for the initiative and taking the chances that, unfortunately, Liverpool couldn't. I mean, in the end, they came out to win. They were smart about it. I think Simeone really knew how to manage his team and realize that, you know, okay, guys, you know, we're down a goal or something, using an example, but, you know, we can't give up. So they went on with it in extra time and it worked. So, you know, you have to give credit when credit's due, I think, with Atletico Madrid. And, you know, they had I think many people looked at this tie initially that it was going to be easy for Liverpool because of how Atleti were faring in the league. But then you have to realize that if you dig in a bit deeper, that you know, Atletico and specifically Cholo Simeone knows how to manage ties like this. I think he's only lost the only ties that he's lost in the Champions League between two legs were any teams that involved Cristiano Ronaldo. So there is that kind of factor and kind of that, you know, experience of how to play these type of great matches in the Champions League.
Yeah, and the last time Cristiano Ronaldo did it, or a Cristiano Ronaldo led team did it, it had to be a hat trick from Cristiano Ronaldo for Juventus to do it just last year. So, for me, Rob, you know, a lot has been made about Adrian in goal because Alisson was out injured, and I think they did miss Alisson in this particular tie over the two legs. But at the same time, you've got to remember, 210 minutes were played. Liverpool only scored two goals. And for Firmino, Mane, and Salah, and I do that all the time, to have those front three and only score two goals in 210 minutes is really more of a testament to what Atleti did defensively over the two legs than it is to what Liverpool did offensively over the two legs. And I think, you know, much credit needs to be given to Atleti for what they did here. You know, some people would say that it was too defensive, it was negative football, blah, blah, blah. But negative football moves them to the final eight of the Champions League. And I think it's a great performance. And it's amazing to see that we're fast forward from a Champions League and Europa League final last year that was just happened just last May, where we had four English teams in those two finals. Now we stand here with Chelsea pretty much out, getting ready to face Bayern Munich down 3-0. And City, although in the driver's seat going back to the Etihad, facing a Real Madrid team that, you know, is certainly a quality side, certainly a team that knows how to do this. And you could actually see, Rob, four English teams all be eliminated before the final eight instead of last year where we had all these English teams moving through. It's just amazing how cyclical the world has become when it comes to movement of players and improvement of quality in some of the other leagues. So the other excitement was obviously Atalanta putting on a 4-3 over Valencia, and a magnificent performance in that one as well. We knew there was going to be goals in that tie, Rob. I know you and I talked about it before, but I don't know that we expected 12 goals over 180 minutes. But really, a Josip Ilicic quadruple, really. Four goals in this one for him. Two by penalty, but two magnificent goals on top of that. it seemed like Ilicic had an answer every time Valencia tried to get back. Gamero had a brace in this one. Torres with a goal in the 67th minute, but it was the Joseph Ilicic show the whole time. What were your thoughts on this particular match?
I thought that the tie was over since the first leg, and this second leg only assured it. But yeah, I think it's a wonderful story and a magnificent story for Atalanta in this Champions League. And I feel as if, though, that now, eventually when it does start, that they have to be taken seriously. They really do. I think I think the talent that you have to your disposal of playing that free-flowing football is a force to be reckoned with for any team that's currently in the competition that will eventually face them. I think also Joseph Ilicic is really showcasing himself as one of the better players in the world right now. I think the form that he's in maybe is not as underrated as we thought, but now it's definitely rated into the sense that, you know, he's demonstrated it in the biggest competition possible. So credit to Atalanta, and I hope that the dream and the story continues much, much farther than anyone could have expected.
Sure, and to Atalanta's benefit, when you have an injury to Martin Darun and you can bring on Duvan Zapata off the bench, you've got some serious firepower, and it'll be interesting to see if they can tighten up the back, Rob, moving forward, depending on who they get in the next round, because obviously they do give up quite a few goals, and they're going to need to address that. I don't think they can go on, you know, running and gunning against teams and winning, you know, 4-3, 5-4, and that kind of thing. I think there's going to be a team, even an Atleti team, that can play an incredibly solid defensive game that can knock them off and keep them off the scoreboard. So we'll have to see how that advances. So hopefully the delay in Champions League, Europa League, and the leagues will be quick, and we will get back to football, because obviously there's a great void in our sporting life right now. So let's dive into that a little bit, because obviously front and center, the coronavirus, like we had said earlier, has shut down most, if not all, of the leagues in the world. I know Mexico is still playing currently. I believe Australia is still playing. Argentina is still playing at the moment. African Cup of Nations has been canceled. Right now, the talk is, as we talked to with Jonathan, there's going to be a meeting on Tuesday in UEFA to see what will be done with the Euros, because that is obviously a big concern with all the other leagues being put on pause for the moment. And you know, it's affected it. And it's also affected the players. Just receiving word this morning that German Pezzella and Patrick Cutrone at Fiorentina were both found to be positive to coronavirus. Manolo Gabbiadini has been diagnosed positive. Daniele Rugani, Rugani was really the first one that caused Juve and Inter to kind of isolate their players, or, you know, to quarantine them. Currently, Cristiano Ronaldo's quarantined in Madeira, back in his home. He's not able to fly back. There have been travel issues with the Italian women's national team not being able to leave to come back to Italy from their tournament in Portugal. That finally got resolved. It's a massive, you know, and I want to keep this on the footballing side of things, Rob. I don't want to get into the human part. That's for somebody else's podcast at the moment. But, you know, we're seeing, I think, finally, the cancellation or the postponement of these matches has been the right thing to do, because we saw in the PSG match against Dortmund that they played behind closed doors. And what happened? 30, 40,000 people congregate outside the Parc des Princes, which is what we don't want to do. We've seen that happen in multiple places where these fans and these groups are congregating outside of these stadiums while the match is going on inside. And that's the last thing we want to do to limit the spread of the disease. Obviously, what we're dealing with is completely unprecedented. In terms of these leagues being put on pause like this, and worldwide. And what are your thoughts about, I guess, getting back into football and moving things forward? I know right now that the pause is 2 weeks, but it could go longer depending on the progression of this illness around the world and if things start to slow down. What are your thoughts? When do you feel personally inside your gut that you think we return to football? And do we see the completion of these leagues? Or do you feel that maybe they just cancel the leagues entirely and starting in next year, like Jonathan had said some clubs are suggesting?
I think that with this season coming to the end so soon, because most leagues end in May and we're 2 months apart. Mm-hmm. I think, unfortunately, there just won't be enough time to finish these leagues in the long term. I feel as if, though, yes, there are going to be a lot of problems of how to manage all of this at once. There really is going to be a lot of repercussions from all the confederations around the world about how they're going to finish their leagues. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you have to, I think there's just so much money and risk being made that many people want it to happen. But I feel as if where are you going to find the time to do it? Mm. But, and that's the issue with this virus. I mean, obviously we're not health experts or anything like that, but you know, at the moment of what we heard, that we don't know when this whole pandemic will end. You know, it's all up in the air. So people are just really twiddling their thumbs and just waiting. Mm. So they're really, I would love to give you a solution. I don't think there is one. If I had the decision in this, I just feel as if though that, you know, there's no time to finish these leagues. You have to not null it, but at least as a suggestion being made, I think in the Bundesliga, I'm trying to remember the tweet that was made, that, you know, you just leave it the way it is and just like as basically just have it ruled out the way that we ended it on the day that the tournament, the leagues shut down. So it really is a really, really weird situation to be in. And I feel for a lot of those people in football that are trying to make these decisions. I think it's a tough ask for anyone. And hopefully that they're really conscious of what I think is best for everyone. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's super weird. I obviously we've never experienced anything like this ever in our life, but I personally think that it's best to just like give the title to whoever is on top and whoever qualifies for the Champions League or anything or relegated, get relegated. I mean, there's nothing else you could really do. I mean, that's my personal opinion. I'd love to hear what you think, and hopefully maybe that could change my vision a little bit.
So for one, I'll come up front and say I don't think that will happen. I don't think they'll cut it off now and say, this is whatever the table looks like. You three teams go down, you three teams come up, you're the winner, you guys go to Champions League, blah, blah, blah. I don't think that'll happen because the schedule is unbalanced right now. The thing about the 38 teams or the 38 matches or 34 in Germany is that everybody plays each other twice, home and away, and it balances. And so you, at the moment, because we're not close to the completion, you know, for example, in the Serie A, I believe we've only played 25 matches. I'm just going to double check that right now. We've played 26. So we've got 12 matches to go. So that, you know, for example, I'm going to just look at Juventus' schedule real quick because I haven't dove into it quite as cleanly as, you know, as we're talking about it. But Juve still have Genoa, Lecce, Torino, AC Milan, Atalanta, big one there. Lazio, that decides the title. That was scheduled right now to play on April 26th. That could decide the title. So if I'm Lazio, I'm saying, no, I want to play. Because right now we have Juve's number, and I know we've got to go to Allianz, but Juve can't beat us. So we can win the Serie A if we go play that match. So I think because of the unbalanced schedule, I don't think that will be the solution. I do think, where we talked about it briefly with Jonathan, I do think competitions like the Copa America and the Euro are going to get moved to 2021. I do believe that is going to happen. So, because at the same time, if you're going to try to squeeze in what semblance of schedule you're going to get left after we come back from this, these players will not have any time off. And we've seen that be detrimental. We saw Messi kind of come out lackluster in the Copa America when Barca went to the Champions League final. I mean, he was literally playing that final. And then getting on a plane, going to South America, I think it was Chile that time, and having to play in that tournament like almost the next day. So I think for the sake of those competitions and the sanctity of those competitions, you won't see that because they won't want to cram it all in. So ultimately, I think those two tournaments will move to 2021. And I think there's a benefit to moving them to 2021, Rob, because when we go to the 2022 World Cup in Qatar, because it's going to be a Winter World Cup, the schedules are going to shift, and something like this will cause the schedules to shift a little bit to be able to allow that tournament to happen in its entirety. So I think there is a silver lining on this extremely dark cloud in that regard. I also wonder, though, my question is, so ultimately I think these seasons will get played out, 38 matches, the whole schedule.
Okay.
I think that will get done. The question now for me is the secondary tournaments. And by secondary terms, I mean the FA Cup, the Coppa
yep.
Italia, the Pokal, the Copa del Rey, those tournaments. I'm not certain those will be completed because, like you said, there's got to be time to finish these things, and these players need rest physically. And depending on how long this pause is going to take place, you could easily see this season extending to the end of June. There are questions that are going to have to be answered about the transfer window. Does it open June 1st? Does it open July 1st? Those things are going to be have to be decided, because if we're still playing matches on June 15th, how can you open the transfer window on July 1st and take players and move them off of teams before the season's completed? So there's going to be a lot of shifting there. And because of all that, to be able to squeeze in the six or eight matches you need left to decide those, and I'm going to call them secondary tournaments, you know, just for lack of a better term, because I don't want to diminish the importance of those tournaments. But to complete those properly, to complete the leagues properly, the Champions League, the Europa League properly, I don't think you have enough time. And then to have an off season, to have a transfer window, I think the first sacrifices will be at the Euro and the Copa America level. And then I think the second, if need be, will be on those secondary tournaments where they will move those matches or cancel that out completely and not award a winner to there. That's my two cents on that. Rob, what do you think?
Yeah, I think now I have a kind of a change of thought. I think the only question will be when that they will finish it. I mean, that's generally the million-dollar question in everyone's mind. It's like, when this all restart? When will it end? How will it end? That kind of thing. But at the same time, you will see. And also, because that World Cup is later, I still have the fears of what's going to happen with, you know, picking the teams to go to the World Cup.
Yes.
What's going to happen? You know, they canceled the World Cup qualifiers for
CONMEBOL,
which was supposed to start at the end of the month. We don't know when that's going to be shifted, obviously, but what I could suggest, or I think would be a good idea, and there's going to be a lot of risk probably going to be made on this, but because it's more viewed for FIFA to make the decisions because they are the top dog in world football, maybe what we'll see is a cancellation of the Copa America, so that once football hopefully is obviously restarted, that instead of having that Copa America in June, we have the qualifiers.
Right.
And then and that would all shift in about how the season will end up finishing. So it's a long discussion, and I'm sure those that are in the different governing bodies across all of the world are trying to make their decisions, but it will have to be a big decision, and we'll have to take the agreement of a lot of countries to decide on this. But it's weird. It's super weird, and hopefully that they can make the right decision that's benefit not just for us fans or for the players, but I think for themselves as well.
I agree. One last thing that I want to mention about the coronavirus and the effects on world football. One of the biggest victims of the coronavirus at this point might be Manchester City. Story came out of Reuters today that Manchester City's appeal with the Court of Arbitration for Sport is going to be delayed. It's going to be delayed because right now the Court of Arbitration for Sport in Switzerland has delayed three hearings, and 16 cases are already on the schedule up until May 18th, and cities is not even listed yet. So these cases are going to be shifted because Switzerland is also dealing with the coronavirus and its effects. And the sacrificial lamb might actually be Manchester City, where if this case is not heard in time leading into the Champions League for 2021, they might be out before their case can even be heard. It would, you know, unfortunately, that is the timing of this, and this would be one of the sacrifices of this particular disease. But, you know, do you think City might actually get to even be heard before the Champions League kicks off in 2020, to begin the season in 2020?
I think just because the coronavirus issue is solved is I think the big priority on all the other teams that are happening across the world. I think their priority is going to be mainly on ensuring the safety and hopefully the assurance of having a league and or a Champions League for all the other teams in Europe. So, yeah, I think their request probably is going to be, I won't say rejected, but probably just not viewed as of yet.
Delayed.
So, exactly. Yeah, there you go. Delayed. So, again, this is just a big mess all around the world. And and again, I hope that there is some sort of solution to this as well.
Agreed. And, you know, and from both of us, the players that have been diagnosed, the coaches, Mikel Arteta, there's so many people that the help, you know, the people that work in these stadiums that may have contracted this virus and are currently dealing with it. We, you know, we hope nothing but the best, speedy recoveries for all of them, and love to see them back at work and back on the pitch very, very soon. And hopefully this, you know, as long as we stick together, this will end for us hopefully soon and end well for us as well. So without much further ado, Rob, I know we don't have any matches of the week to discuss this week because, like we said earlier, all competitions are down, so we have a trivia answer for you. So the trivia question was, and again, try to keep light of it. And actually, Rob, we should talk about it before we give the trivia. Ronaldinho winning his winning his Paraguayan Cup. You know, let's call it the roasted pig. You know, but obviously winning the prison league where he's currently incarcerated for the illegal passports and that sort of thing in Paraguay. He obviously made the soccer team for one of the clubs, of course. And I think the final score, Rob, was, I want to say it was 8-2.
Yeah, that's right.
And some reports were that Ronaldinho was not allowed to score. Other reports were that he scored 5 goals. You know, and it's we don't know which to believe, but, you know, Ronaldinho has added another trophy to his illustrious trophy case. What do you know about the Ronaldinho footballing story in Paraguay right now?
That it's probably the most, probably the league that's getting much more attention than probably any of the other major leagues around the world. In a nutshell, Ronaldinho was incarcerated for his prison, for his passports, an ID falsification from a couple weeks ago. While he's still waiting for an actual sentencing, you know, he's there in the prison just waiting, and it could be up to 6 months. But basically, he decided that, you know, some people wanted him to play in the soccer league that they have there, and that he can not only get that 35-pound roasted pig if he wins the tournament, but even if he participates. So in the end, it's a win-win. But yeah, there are some of the rules that I've continue to, and hopefully you can understand that Ronaldinho, what he has to do in order to participate is that he can't score, he can't shoot, but he can provide passes and of course do and dribbling skills that he's always been accustomed to in his career. So yeah, he's ended up winning the roasted pig, and I think the whole tournament itself, and it's another great trophy in the career of Ronaldinho, and probably the most important one when a big pig is in disposal, because in the end, you know, I think that's the great thing about playing soccer. You know, you play, you have fun, and in the end, you hang out with your friends and you congregate over food, which I think is the best thing that happens. I mean, come on, Joe. I mean, wouldn't you do the same? Just like you happen to just join a tournament where obviously you're going to be with a bunch of inmates, but in the end, you get to go home and eat a big pig.
Roasted pork is delicious. So yeah, you had me at roasted pork. I could play like Ronaldinho when it comes to something like that. But without that trophy, without the roasted pig cup, okay. My question to you, the trivia question was, how many trophies has Ronaldinho won in his career? Individual trophies, club trophies, club and country. I did give you the CONMEBOL pre-Olympic tournament, the Olympic bronze medal, and the FIFA Under-17 World Championship that he won in 97. We also know from last week's trivia question that he has won the Champions League, which he won with Barcelona in 05-06, and the Copa Libertadores, which he won with Atletico Mineiro in 2013. So I'm looking for a number from you, including those five tournaments in your number. How many titles has Ronaldinho won, international and club?
It's hard to give you an exact number, so I'm going to put in an estimation, or like I'm going to round it out. Sure. So the first number that I'll give you, and you can tell me if I'm over or under, is 20.
You are over right now.
I am over. Okay. How close? How over?
Very, very close.
Very, very close. Okay, so I can I'll go for an actual number then. I'm going to go with 17.
18 titles.
Wow.
Okay, and I'll list them for you. With Paris Saint-Germain, he won the Intertoto Cup in 2001. With Barcelona, he won La Liga in 05-06. I'm sorry, 04-05 and 05-06. He won the Supercopa de España in 05-06. He won the Champions League in 05-06. He won with Milan, the Serie A in 2010-2011. With Flamengo, he won the Campeonato Carioca in 2011, the Tasa Guanabara in 2011, the Tasa Rio in 2011, the Campeonato Mineiro in 2013 with Atletico Mineiro, the Copa Libertadores with Atletico Mineiro in 2013, the Recopa Sudamericana in 2014 with Atletico Mineiro, and with Brazil, he's won the Copa America in 99, the World Cup in 2002, the Confederations Cup in 05, and then the other three titles, the U17 World Championship in 97, the Olympic bronze medal in 2008, and the CONMEBOL pre-Olympic tournament in 2000. 18 titles total, 19 if you count the roasted swine cup. So my friend,
let me ask you this, though. What do you feel is his most important trophy out of everything that he's won?
The roasted swine. No, it's the World Cup. It's the 2002 World Cup. Yeah,
It's close. It's close.
Exactly. It's very close.
It's very close. But, a World Cup trophy or a roasted pig in a Paraguayan prison.
Yeah, but I mean, in your opinion, it's the World Cup as well, right?
I think so. Yeah. Individual, obviously, it's the Ballon d'Or, but there's no bigger trophy in the sport than the World Cup.
Exactly. So my friend, without further ado, let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right. And for episode 276 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Jonathan Johnson for joining us. We will be off on the show proper, at least for the next week, because as there is no football being played, there's not going to be much to talk about. However, Rob and I will be bringing you a series of shows to highlight what we were calling the Hall of Foot, with some historical players, some of their perspectives, with some of the top journalists. We'll be efforting those and bringing those to you as they become available. So, for episode 276 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Be safe, wash your hands, and good night.